Chapter 11. In the morning, Joshua's priority was water. He left the bulk of his pack in the safety of his tree and climbed down. Weapons to hand, he made his way towards the bank of the sluggish river that he'd spied out maybe half a mile to the east of his position. He carried plastic fold-out sacks for today's collection of food and water. He'd spotted that some of the trees bore massive nuts, something like coconuts, and he had a medium-term plan to empty out some of those to use as gourds, as he built up a water store in his stockade. All in good time. Right now, he just needed to find breakfast. As he walked, he kept his eyes open for threats of all kinds, not just the exotic like a dwarf T-Rex bounding out of cover, but more mundane deadliness like snakes and scorpions or their local relatives, even ground traps left by elves or other travellers. His eyes were gritty and sore. He hadn't slept enough and he felt irritable, impatient. All the labour he was going to have to put in to create a safe encampment, which had been so much fun in the planning, didn't seem so appealing now it was morning, and he faced the prospect of actually having to do some of it. Maybe he was distracted. He didn't even spot the group of bison until he was within 50 yards of them. He stood stock still. They were a mass of dusty black bodies, clustered close together, working at a patch of greenish ground. They looked like bison. They were clearly cattle-like mammals. But they were eerily silent and very closely grouped, and they had elaborate, tough-looking horns. He could see young pushing between the parents' legs. Now they noticed him standing there, watching them. A big male raised his head and gave off a rumbling bellow of warning. In a heartbeat, they pushed even closer together. The young were head-butted into the middle of the pack, and the adults faced outward, a rough circle bristling with horns, as if they were a single armoured beast, a tremendous, ferociously spined hedgehog, perhaps. It looked a pretty drastic reaction to the presence of a single skinny human. The local dangers must be drastic too. Not a reassuring thought. Cautiously, Joshua backed away and gave the herd a wide berth. He went on to the river, passing south of a low scarp, a dusty, eroded feature. When he reached the riverbank, he eyed the water cautiously. He'd long ago learned that you could expect to find crocs or alligators or some relative in just about any inland body of water, anywhere in the long earth. But the river was broad, flowing slowly, laden with mud and green murk, and he could see it stayed shallow a good way out from the bank. He stepped forward, opening out his carrier sacks. And as he reached the murky water and his view to the north opened up past the rocky scarp, he saw more big beasts. Ducking, he moved back to the cover of the scarp and got down on his haunches. Once again, he'd got within a few dozen yards of a herd of massive animals without even being aware they were there. But they were upwind. They couldn't smell him and showed no signs of reacting to him. He murmured, "Just like you always said, Lapsang. You want to see the wildlife, you go where the water is." Peering around the scarp, he tried to make sense of what he saw. These, at least, were nothing like cattle, though the adults were more massive quadrupeds with muscular bodies. The detail that drew his eye was a mask of armour on each beast's face that flared back from the cheeks and swept around the eyes and on up to form a gleaming white crest over the brow. At first glance, they looked like armoured dinosaurs, like Triceratops, like Ankylosaurus. He'd devoured reconstructions of such things as a kid, in books and online reference sources, and out in the reaches of the long earth, he'd seen for himself what might have appeared to be close relations of such beasts, the products of different evolutions. But these creatures had fur coating their hefty bodies, or wool, thick brown layers of it, not the scaly reptilian hide or the feathers he'd come to associate with dinosaur types. Now he made out infants, standing cautiously under the legs of the adults. In them, the armor mask wasn't so obvious, not so developed, and the basic form was much more apparent. And as they bent to drink from the river, he saw trunks uncurling and dipping into the water. These were elephants or mammoths. In these creatures, the tusks, features always subject to the whims of natural selection, had evidently evolved into that heavy plated mask, sweeping back over the face. As to why a beast the size of an elephant should need armor and should have to creep almost silently in a huddle of its fellows as it dared to sip at the river water, the thing that burst from the deeper water was like an alligator, but running upright on two fat hind legs. Joshua cowered in the shadows of the bluff. The predator ran like a machine, relentless, purposeful, almost silent, and on each of its stubby forepaws it had one huge claw, long and curved, like death's sickle. Those blades must be ideal for disemboweling, even when turned on a beast the size of an elephant. Joshua had seen beasts like this before. He'd run from such beasts before. To his huge relief, the gator ignored him, evidently intent on the elephants. For their size, the elephants responded with remarkable speed. With warning trumpets, they didn't need to be quiet anymore. They got into a kind of formation, just as rapidly as the bison had, with the adults locking their armored faces together, while the young scrambled back behind the barrier. They were like, Joshua thought, a cohort of Roman soldiers, making a shield wall to face the barbarians. Then the gator beast leapt. It flew over the shield wall and landed on top of the row of elephants. The gator slashed and tore with its blade claws, while the elephants bellowed and tried to drive the points of their face armor into the gator's belly. Dust filled the air, and there was a stink of blood and dung, and elephants shrilled in pain and fear. Joshua, unnoticed, scuttled to the water, filled his sacks hurriedly, and moved away, leaving the crowded battlefield behind. He didn't feel secure until he was back up his tree and strapped in. So maybe this was the pattern here. The big herbivores looked like they came from mammalian stock, but the predators that preyed on them were reptilian. This kind of mash-up of ecologies, dinosaurs versus mammals, wasn't so uncommon in this stretch of the long Earth, he'd learned long ago. Each world of the chain of the long Earth differed from its neighbours, a little or a lot, depending, it seemed, on the chance outcome of some set of past events, and every so often a tipping point would be reached and there would be a more dramatic discontinuity. The further out you went across the long Earth, the more those differences accumulated, and the deeper back in time came those branching points. It was all a fundamentally random melting pot. And this was a world so remote from his own, it seemed, that the huge event that had eliminated the dinosaur lineages on Datum Earth was no more than a rumour, a near miss, a bad dream of the deep past. Anyhow, he was going to have to be more watchful, that was clear enough. He needed to keep his attention focused on his surroundings and not the inside of his own 68-year-old head. And, he thought with a kind of grim relish, that was a good thing. Even as a mixed-up 13-year-old pioneer stepper, he'd soon learned that no matter how far you travelled, you couldn't leave behind the fears and regrets and grievances that cluttered up the cargo hold of your mind. But at least alone, focusing on the essentials of life, of survival itself, you could push all that garbage back into the deeper darkness where it belonged, which was one reason he needed his sabbaticals. He filled a flask with water from his sacks, dropped in a purification pill and sipped. He found himself spitting out river-bottom grit. He'd need a filter. He grunted, disappointed with himself. He'd been here the best part of 24 hours, and he hadn't even secured any drinkable water yet. Sister Agnes had told him he was too old. Maybe he should have gone camping in some tamed park of a low-earth world, in the preserved prairie around Madison West 5, maybe. And if he were a mite less stubborn, he might at least move to some world where elephants didn't need to wear armor. He grinned. Hell no. As soon as his heart had stopped pounding, he climbed down from the tree and began to pace out his stockade.